Being a Christian can be hard, especially in the world we live in. Those of you who are older will have seen huge changes in the attitude that people have towards Christianity. From an almost universal nominal belief, just a few generations to go, to apathy in my childhood, and now in many quarters to outright opposition. And increasingly, Christians are questioning our place in the world. For many people, the solution is to withdraw further and further into a Christian ghetto. Outside of the family, some of us rarely interact with those who are not Christians. How many of us this evening can say that we have several good non-Christian friends? And probably even fewer of us would have several good non-Christian friends to whom we witness regularly about Jesus. There's something of a generational split as well that this rapidly changing world has introduced. In the 1950s and 60s, those of you who grew up in that time or perhaps were converted in that era were often taught to withdraw from worldly pursuits. That was part of what being a Christian was. So if you're a Christian from that generation, there's a good chance that you're teetotal. You might never perhaps watch a television program that has bad language, and certainly never one with sexual content. You probably wouldn't go to the pub or to the bingo to socialize with your friends. And you're often shocked, maybe, by the moral standards, or rather the lack of moral standards, of many people today. But younger people, who have learned their Christianity in the last 10 years or so, may have a very different attitude. You'd perhaps emphasize being righteous, not just as what you don't do, but as what you do do. Actively showing God's love to others, you might argue. You might enjoy a beer with your non-Christian friends and wouldn't be at all shocked because one or two of them are gay. You enjoy going to the cinema and you think it's impossible to avoid all sexual content or bad language in films and TV. Maybe that's what you think if you're younger. And that's a caricature, of course. Lots of us are somewhere in between those two positions. But where should we be? Because there's a danger in both positions, isn't there? On the one hand, we can so withdraw from the world that we cease to have any influence on it. And on the other hand, we can so engage with the world that we cease to be different from it. And Jesus addresses that very clearly in his Sermon on the Mount. And in the section that we read earlier from verses 13 through to 16 of Matthew chapter 5, where Jesus describes Christians as both the salt of the earth and the light of the world, Jesus is making it very clear there that we're not to become like the world, but we're also not to hide from the world. So let's dive in, shall we, and see what Jesus has to say. There's four things that I want to draw out from these verses this evening. Here's the first one. You're not like the world. You are not like the world. I'm looking here at the verses as a whole and the very way that Jesus describes his followers. He describes his followers, that of course includes every Christian today, he describes his followers as salt of the earth and the light of the world. Now, in the ancient world, salt and light are literally lifesavers. That's not an exaggeration. That is literally true. Salt and light are lifesavers. Without salt and light, the ancient world might never have survived into the 21st century. And Jesus is therefore helping us to understand that one of the roles that Christians have here in this world is to stop the world going bad. We're to be a break against evil and decay and sin. That is part of the job that we've been given here on earth as salt and light. You see, salt acted as a life saver, because it preserved meat and it stopped it from going off. Nowadays, of course, if we buy some meat from the supermarket, we pop it into the fridge. If it's getting near the sell-by date and we haven't eaten it yet, we might move it into the freezer, and there it will last for weeks, if not months. But of course, they didn't have refrigerators and freezers in the ancient world. So what they would do when an animal was slaughtered, The meat would be taken, some obviously perhaps would be cooked immediately, but everything that wasn't immediately eaten would be rubbed with salt, and lots of it. And actually, if the salt really was applied properly, that meat then could last for months, as long as it does in a freezer nowadays. It stopped the meat going bad. And of course, light in many ways performs a similar function. We get so used to light, don't we? We can turn the lights on very easily. Most of us really don't know what it is to be in complete darkness. It's only maybe if we have a power cut at home that we're in complete darkness. And even then, it's only for a few seconds before we get our mobile phones out and start to hunt around for candles or a torch. But in the ancient world, at night time, it could be very dark indeed. There'd be no streetlights, of course. And if you were out in the countryside at night, and many people were, of course, because their jobs required them to do so, to work in the fields and then maybe to walk home at night, then in the dark, animals, wild animals, would perhaps prey on you. It would be easy, perhaps, to fall into some kind of gully or chasm and injure yourself, perhaps even to so severely that you could then not get home. And light, therefore, was an absolute lifesaver. And it still is today, except it's so common we don't realize it in quite the same way. So Jesus is helping us to understand that the difference then between the presence of Christians and the absence of Christians, well, just changes everything. We're so different from the world. The difference of light and darkness. And both salt and light are very small things, aren't they, that can have a big impact. You and I don't think very much about salt at all, do we? None of us are stressing, I don't think, because we perhaps are short of salt in our cupboards. Most of us probably wouldn't even know how much salt we've got in our cupboards. We don't worry about it at all. It's no big deal. We don't think about it. We don't particularly think about light very often because we're so used to it. We don't worry about those things. They're just small things. But they're small things, as we've seen, that have a huge impact. And this is what Jesus is helping us to understand. That as Christians, we might just be a remnant. We might just be a tiny part of the world. There might be very few of us. But the very few of us can make a big difference and have a huge impact on the lives of others. And that's because we are different from the world. We're not like the world. If we were the same as the world, we wouldn't have any impact at all. But because we're different, we can have a real impact. And the consequences of this are very significant. The consequences of this, that on the good side, where Christians really are salt and light, we make a huge impact on our society. But the negative, where we fail to be salt and light, that has a detrimental effect on our society. We've talked already, haven't we, about how much society has changed, particularly in terms of its moral values and in terms of its beliefs. Why do you think that is? Why do you think society is not what it once was? Why are far fewer people expressing faith in Jesus Christ and believing the truths of the Scripture? Why are far fewer people holding the standards of the Bible in terms of the lives that they live and their morality that they adhere to? Why is that? Well, it's easy perhaps to point the finger and to point to the government especially and to talk about rules that have been passed and the way in which the government have legalized things maybe that a generation or two would have been outlawed. It's easy to point the finger. But actually, if we're going to point the finger, we need to realize that three fingers are pointing back at us. Let me give you a quote from John Stott. He says this: if the house is dark at night, there's no sense in blaming the house for its darkness. That's what happens when the sun goes down. The question to ask is, where is the light? Again, if meat goes bad and becomes inedible, there's no sense in blaming the meat for its decay. That's what happens when bacteria are left free to breed. The question to ask is, where is the salt? Similarly, if society, he says, becomes corrupt like a dark night or stinking meat, There's no sense in blaming society for its corruption. That's what happens when human evil is unchecked and unrestrained. The question to ask is, where is the church? Where is the salt and light of Jesus? I was talking to somebody on Wednesday evening about this very, very question. Why is Britain the way that it is? And if you look back at the history, you discover that actually the church forgot its own beliefs long before the government introduced laws and so on. We can't blame the government for the state that our nation in. It's the church's job to be salt and light. We have to be honest and say over generations, we have failed to be salt and light in the way that we should have been. And the result of that is to have seen a greater decay in society than maybe there otherwise would have been. So that's the first thing that we can learn from this passage. You are not like the world. But there's something else that we can learn from the passage now. Looking now at verse 13. Don't become like the world, Jesus says. He tells us you're not like the world. Excuse me. You're as different as light and darkness. But there's a danger, he says. Even though you're not like the world, you could become like the world. And verse 13 warns us of that. It warns us about a salt losing its taste and losing its saltiness. Don't become like the world. Don't lose your saltiness, Jesus is saying. Don't become like the world. And perhaps the danger here is particularly for younger Christians who seek to engage more in the world. There's a real danger for those of us who are younger. Now, some of you might be wondering how on earth salt does lose its saltiness. After all, you've probably never experienced that. You've probably never got some salt and put it on your chips or whatever and thought, hang on, that doesn't taste like salt anymore. It's lost its saltiness. In fact, that can't happen in the table salt that we use nowadays. But actually, in Jesus' day, they didn't use table salt in the way that we do. Do you remember we said they needed a huge amount of salt in order to preserve the meat? So what they used to use was rock salt, or salt that they would get from around the Dead Sea, for example. And what would often happen there is that salt would be quarried or brought together. And then sometimes you would bring this salt to the table or to the meat, and you'd realize that what looked like a big chunk of salt and was just the same color and texture as all the other bits of salt, actually this particular bit of salt wasn't salty at all. Because what may have happened with this rock is that over time maybe the rock got damp, and the salt that was in amongst the rock had been absorbed into the water and then washed away. And what you were left with then was just the rock and not the salt. And that's what Jesus is describing here. It's completely ineffective. And just about the only thing that you can use this for now is to put on the floor as a kind of path, to be thrown out and trampled under people's feet. That's what they used it for. And what Jesus is saying is that Christians, sadly, can become as useless as that. Well, how do Christians become like the world? Well, little by little, crossing lines. Have you had that experience where you've said to yourself, well, I'll go out with my Christian friends, but I won't do so-and-so. And maybe for a few weeks you don't do so-and-so, but then the ribbon gets to you and they twist your arm, and then you do it. And you say to yourself, well, okay, that wasn't too bad. It wasn't really sinful. So I won't do this next thing. And then after several weeks, or maybe several months, you've crossed that line too. And this is what can often happen. Little by little, we cross a line and we find ourselves becoming more and more like the world. So how can we stop this happening? How can we stop ourselves becoming more and more like the world? How can we retain our saltiness? Well, the way to retain our saltiness is simply to be salty. In other words, there's a purpose to our saltiness. Just as salt preserves or adds taste, so our witness in the world is supposed to have an impact on people. And if our witness is having that impact, so when we go to our friends or when we socialize together or whatever it might be, if during those occasions we are witnessing, then we will discover that actually our saltiness is retained. And that might happen in all kinds of ways. It might be what we don't do when we're with our friends. It might be that we don't laugh at their inappropriate jokes. It might be that we don't get involved in their gossip. And in so doing, we're being salty. And as we're being salty, it makes it easier to retain our saltiness and harder to cross those lines into worldliness. It might be what we do. We might show real kindness and love to those whom we're with, particularly to perhaps those to whom others don't always show kindness and love. It might be what we say. We might speak of Jesus in natural conversation. Our friends might be talking about politics and the hopeless leaders that we've got in this country who don't know what they're doing. And you might simply say, well, I'm glad my trust is in someone who's a better leader than they. And that might be all you say until the question comes, well, who are you talking about? And you can talk briefly perhaps about Jesus. And as we do those things, and as we seek the Lord's help in prayer as we do those things, we discover that we're just being salty and we're flavoring the conversation around us. I'm sure many of you, if not all of you, have had experience of people not swearing, or not telling certain kinds of jokes, or not gossiping when you're around. It doesn't always happen, of course. But if it doesn't happen at all, then perhaps there is something not quite right in your witness. If people think that is okay to do when you're around. But no, we have this preserving effect when we deliberately seek to be like Jesus in what we don't do, in what we do, and in what we say. Because when we don't make those conscious decisions with the help of God to be like Jesus and to speak about Jesus, we'll end up becoming like the world and we'll lose our saltiness. And if the salt has lost its taste, how shall its saltiness be restored? In other words, Jesus is saying here is, look, if you don't act like a Christian, can you really be sure you're converted? Now, acting like a Christian doesn't make us a Christian, of course. But being a Christian changes our behavior. And Jesus is helping us to understand here that, well, if we're not living this out, can we really be confident of our salvation? So you are not like the world, Jesus says. Don't become like the world, verse 13. Thirdly now, don't hide from the world, verses 14 and 15. The light of the world. Don't hide from the world. You see, when Jesus was talking about salt, he was talking about what might happen if the salt lost its saltiness. But when he talks about the light, his emphasis is something different. With a light, he's talking about the need to give light to all of the house, not putting it under a basket, but put it on a stand. Don't hide the light away, in other words. And this danger perhaps is biggest for older Christians. You see, those of us who have grown up with an emphasis on righteousness and morality, it's a great emphasis to have, of living out holy lives. But if that causes us to withdraw entirely from the world, then that holiness is hidden from those who need to see it most. It may not be deliberate. We might not kind of deliberately cut off our non-Christian friends, but maybe over time, perhaps as an overreaction to some of the problems that younger Christians face, we can end up withdrawing into our own holy huddle. And outside of the church and our families, the only non-Christians we speak to are the receptionist at the doctor's and the man driving the bus. No, we're not to hide from the world, Jesus says. We're to make sure our light can shine out. And actually, even those who are younger can sometimes fall into this trap. Perhaps those of you who are on Facebook, maybe you wonder a little bit, is it really wise to share these Christian things when I've got so many non-Christian friends who are my friends on Facebook? And we can hide ourselves away from the world too. Have a church life, and then we can have a secret life with our friends. We hide from the world. But what Jesus is telling us here is, no, our light needs to shine before others. We'll come to that in verse 16. Our light needs to give light to all in the house. You see, in Jesus' day, many of the houses, particularly the houses that poorer folk lived in, would have basically just one room downstairs. That's all they would have. And everybody would sleep and eat and cook, and even maybe the livestock might even come into that room at night, and it would just be one room. And what Jesus is saying here is, well, you need light in that room, especially at night, so what are you going to do? You're going to find a stand high up, and you're going to put that your light right on there so it can shine right throughout the whole house. And that's what your life and mine ought to be within our circle of non-Christian friends. We ought to be, as it were, that light that shines all over and all around our non-Christian friends. So we can't hide away. We need to be out there, in the world, as it were, seeking to testify to and to honour the Lord Jesus in the way that we live. But we need to be careful how we do this. On Wednesday last week, as you know, we were in the funeral down at the crematorium of Gloria's brother, Tony. And Moses came along to the funeral as well. And Sharon set him at the back, out of the way. She was worried, as understandably after tonight, she was worried that he might make a lot of noise. Didn't want him to do that in the funeral. So she'd prepped him beforehand. She told him we were going to church. She thought he would understand that, even though it was at the crib. We're going to church. What do you need to do in the church? You need to be quiet. Okay. So he's learnt. In theory, he needs to be quiet in church. And there we were, 10 minutes or so into the service, about halfway through. And those people who had drifted off from listening to me would have heard a voice from the back. Mummy, I'm being quiet. Well, you were. But by drawing attention to it, you rather spoilt it, Moses. And unfortunately, some Christians are like that when we're being light in the world. If we draw attention to ourselves, look at me, I'm shining brightly, we suddenly stop shining brightly. And instead of being a light to the world, we become a thorn in people's side. Instead of being people who are witnessing to Jesus Christ and demonstrating his righteousness, we become those who are being self-righteous and are seen as looking down to others. So there's a careful balance to be had here, isn't there? We're not to hide from the world, but neither are we to draw attention to ourselves. We need to be those that at the end, of it were, of the funeral service, people can come and say, weren't you quiet? Or at the end of the time with our friends, people can come to us and say, I really appreciated the way that you stood up for me when other people were having a go. I really appreciated the way that you don't speak behind my back as other people do. I really appreciated you not joining in, because actually what everyone else was doing was making me uncomfortable as well. And I appreciated your backing. When people see it for themselves. So we're not to hide from the world, but we must never draw attention to ourselves. And when we consider what Jesus is saying here, we remember too that he says, you are the light of the world. And that little phrase, light of the world, should ring some bells for us, shouldn't it? Because we may remember another occasion where Jesus spoke of being the light of the world. Do you remember in John's Gospel? And he said on that second occasion, not you are the light of the world. What did he say? I am the light of the world. You see, what Jesus is calling us here is nothing less than being like him. He ultimately is the light of the world. And what Jesus is looking for us to do is to be like him. And of course, therefore, if we're to be like him, we must have his help. This is not something that you and I can just go out and do on our own and be salt and light. No, of course not. We don't have that strength. We need Jesus working in us. And as Jesus works in us, then people will see not us, but him. And the only way in which we can ensure, therefore, that we are not hiding from the world is to ask the Lord for help in consciously making an effort to spend time in a godly way with those who are not yet believers. I don't think holiness comes by accident, do you? I don't think righteousness happens incidentally. It certainly doesn't in my life. If I am to be holy and if I'm to be righteous, and I'm sure it's exactly the same to you, we have to try. We have to work hard at it. We have to seek God's help. We have to plan to live in that way. It doesn't happen by accident. It's not in our human nature to live in that way. So therefore, in our witness too, it won't come by accident. It won't come incidentally. We need to make a conscious effort to spend time with those who are not yet Christians, and as we do so, to live in a godly way. So all this we can sum up then with a final thing that Jesus says from verse 16. He's told us already, you're not like the world. Don't become like the world. Don't hide from the world. Finally now, verse 16, shine your light into the world. We've had the negatives. We've had the things that we're not to do. We're not to be like the world. We're not to become like the world. We're not to hide from the world. Excuse me. Here now we have the positive. Shine your light into the world. Can you see it in verse 16? Let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. You see, the wonderful thing about light, as Jesus will say elsewhere, is that darkness cannot overcome light. I've mentioned it before as we've been looking at similar sayings of Jesus, but it's worth repeating. Light is something that is positive, that's something that is real. It's the presence of something, not the absence of something. Darkness is the absence of something. That's all it is. It's nothing. You can't pass darkness around. You could have a torch and you could pass light around, but you can't pass darkness around. It doesn't work like that. So whenever you have light, it always overcomes darkness by definition. The only thing that you can do with a light is to do what Jesus warns us against here. Put it under a basket, hide it away. But if you've got that light, and if it's not hidden, then it will shine into the darkness. And it doesn't matter how much darkness you've got, you can't stop the light from shining. It's the same with that city on a hill, isn't it, that Jesus has described earlier. It cannot be hidden. And Jesus is saying here that if we're genuinely converted, if Jesus genuinely is living in our souls, if he's with us, then that light won't be hidden and cannot be hidden and will shine into the world. And as that happens, something wonderful will take place, Jesus says. You can see it at the end of verse 16. They'll see your good works and they'll give glory to your Father who is in heaven. You see, there's a temptation, we've described it a little bit already, of wanting other people to think well of us. And if we go round in our lives trying to get other people to think well of us, then we're going to end up in a situation where actually we are going to end up conforming to what they want. And as we do that, we're going to end up like that salt losing its saltiness. Because we'll just become like the world if we're trying to please the world and get them to like us. That's not the result. We're not therefore to go about shining our light so that people will praise us and like us. But what Jesus is saying here is that if our good works are coming not from a desire to be pleasing to others, but from a desire to serve the Lord, then what will happen is that people will see your good works and they'll give glory not to you, but to your Father who is in heaven. And he will be praised because he will be at work in you. as his light, as it were, is shining into the world. Now, there's an emphasis here in verse 16 on the things that we do, isn't there? Can you see that? So that your good works will give glory to the Father in heaven. But remember where we are. We're in the Sermon on the Mount. Remember where we've just come from. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed is the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God, and so on. You see, the emphasis in the Sermon on the Mount is not simply on what we do, but on who we are. And what Jesus is encouraging us here is to understand that actually what God does is he changes our character so we become more like Jesus. And as we become more like Jesus, we then start to behave and act more like Jesus. And yes, as we saw last week, there are times when that will mean others revile and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. That will happen. But in the same way, as our light shines before others, they will see our good works and give glory to our Father who is in heaven. You see, when we think about it, it seems like these two different sections are saying opposite things. On the one hand, earlier on in verses 11 and 12, Jesus seems to be saying that if you live rightly, then you'll be persecuted. And now he's saying, if you live rightly, God will be praised and glorified. So which is it? It's both, of course. It's both. And sometimes maybe we face the persecution and we lose stomach for the battle and the fight. And we never persevere long enough to see others giving glory to our Father who is in heaven. But Jesus warned us about the persecution first, and it will come. And it may be when you take a stand and do what is right that your friends, well, maybe persecute you is too strong a word, but certainly make fun of you. Don't want to be with you. It's certainly a very real possibility. But don't let that stop you. Don't let that make you lose your saltiness. Don't let that make you hide away from the world. But shine your light into the world with God's help, and you will see that through your good works, at least some will see what you are like, realize that it's Jesus in you, and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. The greater the darkness, the brighter the light can shine.